ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Translation: having achieved love of Godhead, the devotees sometimes cry out loud, absorbed in thought of the infallible Lord. Sometimes they laugh, feeling great pleasure, speak out loud to the Lord, dance or sing. Such devotees, having transcended material conditioned life, sometimes imitate the unborn supreme by acting out his pastimes, and sometimes achieving his personal audience, they remain peaceful and silent. Prabhupada, Srila Vishwanath Chakra Thakur, has explained the symptoms of love of Godhead. Rudanti, the devotee, he's crying, thinking, another day has passed and still I could not obtain Krishna. Then what will I do? Where will I go? From whom shall I inquire? And who can possibly help me reach Krishna? Hasanti, it is late at night. The sky is dark and Krishna is determined to steal from the house of one of the elderly gopis. He is hiding underneath a tree in the corner of the courtyard belonging to one of the cowherd men. Although Krishna thinks that he is completely concealed, he suddenly hears a voice from one of the elderly members of the family. Who are you there? Who are you, I say? Thus Krishna has been caught and he begins to flee the courtyard. When this humorous scene is revealed to the devotee begins to laugh heartily. Nandanti, when Krishna actually reveals his transcendental form to the devotee experiences the highest transcendental bliss. Vadanti, the devotee says to the Lord, O Krishna, after so many days I have finally achieved you. When all of the devotee's senses are absorbed in Sri Krishna, the devotee has successfully transcended the material condition of life. This is indicated by the word alokikaha. Alokikaha, or the transcendental platform, is explained by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita, Mancha Yogya Vicharena Bhakti Yogena Sivati Sagunam Samatitaitan Dhamma Guyaya Kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Ajam Halim Anushila Yanti, Talilam Adhinayanti. Anushila Yanti indicates that out of extreme ecstasy, the devotees sometimes imitate or act out the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. This ecstatic symptom was manifested by the gopis in Vrindavan during Krishna's absence. In the 21st verse of this chapter, it was stated that one who has understood that there is no happiness either on earth or in material heaven must surrender at the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. Tasmād gurum prapadyeta jignyasu shreya uttamam. The following verses gave many detailed instructions regarding the activities of a bona fide disciple. Now this verse is describing the mature fruit of devotional service, namely pure love of Godhead. Everyone has the opportunity to come to this platform of transcendental bliss by taking the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna's representative on his head. One should give up the mentality of envy and false prestige and humbly take shelter of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual master is to be considered the incarnation of the Lord's mercy. There is absolutely no doubt that a sincere soul who serves a bona fide spiritual master will achieve the highest perfection of life. Shreya Uttamam, he will enjoy eternal bliss and knowledge in the personal abode of the Lord. Today is my 47th death day. I'm now 47 years dead in this body, as Prabhupada would point out that if someone is 50 years old, that means they're 50 years dead. And actually, we are dead without Krishna consciousness. Achaitanyamidam Vishvam, this whole material world is in dead condition, lifeless, without Krishna consciousness. Often people ask me when I was born, and I tell them on Janmashtami Day in 1975, and they say, well, you look older than that. No, well, that's the day of the real birth, spiritual birth. I've accepted at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. But still, I didn't attain Krishna. So here this is pointed out how devotees, they cry. I'm not even crying. They're crying. I didn't attain Krishna. Madhavendra Purika, he was the first devotee in this Kali Yuga to bring the pure love of God with the characteristic that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preached, topmost resplendent loving feelings of Krishna that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to preach. This Madhavendra Puri, he gave what is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has described as Premankur, the sprout, just the beginning to sprout, the tree of love of God. So Madhavendra Puri, he, before passing away, he was lying sick for many days, not actually sick, really. He was exhibiting the pastime of being sick, because we should understand that a great liberated devotee, he is not subject to sickness or health or any such condition. He is beyond all these things. But sometimes devotees, they exhibit the pastime of being sick, and Madhavendra Puri was doing so before passing away, shortly before his passing away from this world. And he lamented. What is that verse? Ayi dina daya janata matura. That, Krishna, I could not attain you. What should I do? Where should I go? I could not attain you. So this mood of plaintive, crying for Krishna, plaintive means calling out with a feeling of great distress, pain in the heart. This is called in Sanskrit kato. Say that word in Hindi, kato. It means just like that calling out in distress, the distress that one feels due to separation from the beloved or not being able to attain the beloved. So we'll find this term, kato, that is often used in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita to describe Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kato, his feeling of distress, which was that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he personally experienced this every night while at Puri, while residing in Puri, after going for his tour to South India. Then he was residing at the Gambhira, that is the room in the house of Kashi Mishra, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed, and he would pass the night most of the night he would pass with Sri Damodar and Ramananda Rai, his two most intimate associates. During the daytime, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be engaged in various activities with many devotees, and they would have lots of kirtan, and they would be listening to Bhagavatam. Especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to go daily. He would walk from his house to come here a little distance. Now there are so many roads. Just go straight. So it would be not very far. Anyway, to the temple of Tota Gopinatha, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had given Gadadhar Pandit the service of worshipping Gopinath, the Gopinath deity, who came to be known as Tota Gopinath, because he was, Tota that means a garden, that's a local term for garden, so there was a nice garden there at that time, and Gadadhar Pandit would worship Gopinath there, along with the Radha and Lalita deities. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go there daily with so many other associates, and in the courtyard of the temple of Gopinath, Mahaprabhu would listen to Gadadhar Pandit recite the Bhagavatam, and especially he would recite the sections of the Bhagavatam describing the pastimes of Dhruv Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, which it's also stated that even in his youth, before taking sannyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially liked to hear these sections from the Bhagavatam. So in this way he would be bathing three times in the sea. He had a regular schedule. He would go for darshan of Jagannath. He would accept prasad, usually in different people's, different devotees' residences. So in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was engaged in various ways during the day. And in this way, he remained happy during the day. But at night, when there were no various activities, just he would be alone with his mind. If we're alone, we're alone with our minds. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would say, Anya Hridai Man Maraman Vrindavan, that others' heart and their mind is the same, but my mind is in Vrindavan. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was feeling that separation from Vrindavan, and very painful, feeling great pain with Ramananda Rai and Sri Damodar. He would experience the painful ecstasy, which sounds like an oxymoron or a contradiction, that painful ecstasy. Ecstasy means something which is very enjoyable, and painful, generally don't think that pain is very enjoyable. Of course, there is a certain kind of mentally deranged person called a masochist, or who inflicts pain on his body and he thinks it's enjoyable, but generally it's not considered enjoyable. Pain and enjoyment are not considered synonymous, rather the opposite. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was especially absorbed in the feelings of Srimati Radharani after Krishna left Vrindavan. So that was very painful for her, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was experiencing that. And Ramananda Rai and Srup Damodar, they would sing different verses from Shastra, from Bhagavatam, from the songs and poems composed by Chandidas, Vidyapati, and Jaidev Goswami, especially that Gita Govinda. And Ramananda Rai would also recite prayers or verses from his own Jagannath Vallabha Nataka, a drama which he had composed. And especially from these sources and from other sources also, they would recite different poems and shlokas and couplets which would enhance the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or when he became too much deeply overcome by despair at not attaining Krishna, then sometimes Sri Damodara would sing a different verse which would change the mood, and how then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be saved from his very deep despair and would come to a more happy mood. But generally his nights were at the Gambhira, were spent in prema kapara, simply crying plaintively for Krishna. And this was the topmost ecstasy that he experienced. It's difficult to understand how the grief of separation from Krishna is experienced as the highest ecstasy, but that is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, how that the nature of prem or love for Krishna, it is very, sometimes described as very bitter, or sometimes described as a burning pain in the heart, but at the same time it is extraordinarily sweet. So both characteristics are there. The pain is sweetness. Prabhupada described in Nectar of Devotion, he explained this, that how is it that this prema or love of Krishna is full of distress, but at the same time it advertises the topmost ecstasy. And Prabhupada gave an example that the Ramayana, in Ramayana the principal rasa, there are different rasas, there are the five primary rasas, Shantadasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Sringara. And there are also supplementary rasas, Gona rasa, Mukhya rasa, and Gona rasa. So among the Gona rasa, or the supplementary rasas, one is Karunya rasa, which actually these are all terms which come in dramatics. You'll find in the Natya Shastra, or the Natya Shastra means the science of dramatics and dance. So all these are described, how the actors will manifest the different rasas, and with the aim of making that rasa become manifest within the heart of the audience. So in the Western world there's also the science of dramatics, and exactly the term which corresponds to karunya rasa is pathos. It's a mood of pathos is it's a feeling of sadness, which at the same time there's a sweet tinge to it. Sweet in the sense that there's a sentiment for the sentiment for, we'll find it in it. Just like in so many dramas, in Shakespeare's dramas, there are tragedies and there are comedies and there are tragicomedies. People also go to see the tragedy. People know it's a sad story. And they go to see it. Why do they go to see it? Because there's some pleasure in that. So, Ram Leela, it's mostly, you could say, it's a tragedy. It's full of karunya rasa, but it's pathos. So Prabhupada gave the example how everyone knows that Ram Leela, there's so much sadness in it, that there was so much happiness that Ram is going to be crowned as the prince regent of Ayodhya, and how wonderful, all the citizens are very happy, he's very nicely married with Sita Devi, and what better couple could there be than this? All very happy to see Lord Ram in his happiness. That is the happiness of devotees, seeing the Lord happy in his happiness. But then, all of a sudden, like a thunderbolt that strikes on the head of all the citizens of Ayodhya, Ram is banished to the forest. To live not in happiness, but in a very demeaning situation for a kshatriya, bereft of all his wealth, and simply living in a very poor, poverty-stricken life in the forest. So everyone in Ayodhya was very much saddened by this. Everyone except Lord Ram himself. He simply accepted. All right. He was not attached. Showing the example for a kshatriya, how he can rule and how he should rule without attachment, not attached. So eventually he came back to rule, but he wasn't attached to that ruling, and later on also Bharat, he also showed how not attached to ruling, I'm only attached to serving Lord Ram. So the whole of Ayodhya was plunged into distress. But Ram was very happy. He said when he came to the forest, actually I'm very happy, it's very nice, I like the forest. It's, you see, and Sita was also distressed for her to see Lord Ram with his hair matted, and to see him just going bare feet without being served by so many others. But she was also very happy to have his intimate association. And she also, forest life is difficult, but there are many pleasurable things also. To see the deer jumping and the changing of the seasons with different flowers and fruits. So Sita and Ram, they were very happy together in the forest, but then again, unhappiness struck when the personification of evil, Ravan, stole away Sita. Oh, anyway, it's a very long story, and eventually Ram retrieved Sita from the hands of Ravana. There's so many friendships made and so many things in the meantime. And having attained having again attained Sita, then she came into public, and all the monkeys and everyone were there, they were waiting. And normally a woman won't come in public, but there are certain, chaste woman won't come out in public, but there are certain instances in which she may, and it was cited from Shastra how she may come in public at this time. And all the monkeys, they actually wanted to see her, not out of an improper desire to see her, but they wanted to see, who is this? Who is this lady who Ram has gone to so much trouble, and the whole of Lanka has been razed, and so many people killed, and for the sake of this, who is this personality that Ram is so much attached to? We ourselves are so much attached to Lord Rama. Then how great is this lady that he is so much attached to her? They didn't think it's a bad thing that he should be attached to her. So for so many reasons, they wanted to see Sita Devi, and she was also very anxious to see Lord Rama. Of course, she was very anxious to see Lord Ram. She had no other thought in her mind than Ram. She was so much distressed at being taken away by Radha. She was so happy to see Lord Ram. But then when she came into his presence, she saw that he didn't look happy. He looked very grim. And he spoke to her very harshly,
what sounded like very harsh words, you'd think that his heart would be melting to receive her. But he spoke very harshly. He said that, I have now done my duty to uphold the dignity of my family, that my wife has been kidnapped, and I have killed the perpetrator of this crime and released my wife from his clutches. Now I have done my duty, and you may go wherever you like, because you have been away from my home for 1 year. We cannot trust any woman who is away from the protection of her husband, even for 1 day, so not to speak of for 1 year. So therefore, now you are freed, and you may go wherever you like and do whatever you like. And this was very horrible news for Sita Devi and for everyone. You know, when we went through this whole fight and we thought that we're going to reunite Sita with Ram, now they are united and he's telling them, I don't want anything more to do with you. So more sadness. And then Sita Devi, she said, she called, all right, then we should test. I have not even for a moment thought of or desired even slightly within my mind anyone but Lord Ram. And let the fire go. I shall enter the fire and I shall call Agni Dev, who is present everywhere. He's one of the devas, being the deva of the fire element, he is present everywhere, because fire is present wherever there is heat, there is fire. So there is heat, otherwise this world would be frozen. And Agni is present within everyone's, but within every living body, especially there's heat in the body, so he's present there. So she called to Agni. She said, I will enter fire, and Agni can bear witness that if I have ever, even for a moment, even slightly, desired anyone other than Ram, or if in any way my chastity towards Lord Ram has been violated, even slightly, even subconsciously, even within my mind, then may Agni consume this body, because I myself have no desire to maintain it. If I myself be even slightly unchaste, then let Agni consume my body. Otherwise, let him bear witness that I am a chaste wife, suitable to be reunited with Lord Ram. So, Lakshman had the unpleasant duty of building a fire for Sita to enter, and she entered, and all the monkeys that were present, they were fighting. Previously they were fighting, killing without any mercy, slaughtering the Rakshasas. But they could not see this. They simply covered. They had seen for so many days blood and death, but this they could not see. They simply covered their eyes and screamed. And Agni Dev delivered Sita Devi. So more sadness. And then happiness. All right, now Sita and Ram are again united. And then unhappiness for Lord Ram too. That came before the Dasharatha Nithanath unhappiness and left this world. So that was unhappiness for Lord Ram. And then again happiness. Now they're reunited and all came back to Lanka. All the citizens very happy, everything is very wonderful. Now Lord Ram is back with Sita. And then again there came the Lord Ram saw the necessity to banish Sita. And then he lived for so many years, 12,000 years, ruling Ayodhya without Sita. So it's simply there are moments where there are happiness in Ram Leela, but wherever there is happiness, there's a little happiness, then again everything comes down to the sad situation. So Prabhupada, of course I dilated a bit on this, but Prabhupada just gave briefly in the Nectar of Devotion, describing how Ram Lila is full of sadness. But then how is it, Prabhupada gives the rhetorical question, how is it that great devotees like Hanuman and so many other great devotees of Lord Ram, and even not great devotees, but what we may say, devotees, they like to hear Ram Lila again and again and again. Because actually it is it's a giver of happiness. It appears to be distress, but actually it's simply transcendental happiness. Shrinu sukadam shubhadam bhavasaram. To hear the pastimes of the Lord in his various avatars, including that of Lord Ram, which is mentioned among the Das avatar. This is from Dash avatar story. That hearing about the pastimes of the Lord in his various avatars is, it gives happiness and auspiciousness. So that although it may appear to be very sad, it is all transcendental bliss. There's no sadness in the life of the devotee ever. There's no sadness. There's no distress. There may appear to be distress. But what appears to be distress in the pastimes of the Lord and of his devotees, it is all transcendental happiness. Jato dekho vaishnavaya bevaha duk nischoy jane ho taha paramanda suk. Vrindavan Das Thakur and Chaitanya Bhagavan has given the warning, don't think that devotees are ever distressed. Because their apparent distress is actually it's all transcendental happiness. Once a devotee showed Prabhupada, there's quite a well-known picture. I don't know if it's well-known nowadays, but in those days it was, even when I joined, it was quite a well-known picture. That was a photo of Prabhupada. It was on the wall of our temple, the Belly Place Temple in London, of Prabhupada with his mouth turned down. If you see someone smiling and with upturned, that's smiling, it seems like happy, and downed, it seems like sad. And one devotee said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, in this photo you look very sad. And Prabhupada said, you don't know. That was a moment of great ecstasy, transcendental ecstasy. So Krishna's pastimes are full of ecstasy. Devotees are full of ecstasy, even if it's sometimes manifest as crying, it's manifest as separation from Krishna, which the devotee feels very sad. It's all transcendental bliss. One thing I noticed about in American culture, especially culture, we're using for the sake of a better term, in the absence of any other term, although it's not really a very precise term for the American way of life, but they seem to equate happiness with smiling and laughing. Whereas you see here in India, it's not that people, they always have to be smiling and laughing. It's a more grave kind of culture. It's not. In America, if someone gives you a gift, you have to make a big, oh, thank you very much, wonderful. You have to make a. It's required in the culture that you have to. You live in America, right? You have to make a big show and you have to say, thank you. Whereas in Indian culture, you just accept it. You don't just say, wow, that's right. You just accept, that's a good, that's very nice. It's not required to make a big show. And if one does make a big show, then what happened? I gave something, maybe a chador or something, and he's really so much, overcome with ecstasy because I gave a chador. But rather, giving gifts and receiving gifts, it's a token of appreciation or respect, or like this. But the same thing in the marital relationship in the Western world. One has to always, the husband and wife always have to tell each other, I love you, and they have to kiss each other when he drops her off to work or she drops him off to work, and they have to kiss each other. They very much making a show, and it very much requires an outward show, outward expression. And often inside there's nothing very much there. Whereas in Indian culture, the husband and wife, they don't say to each other, I love you. What are you saying? If he says, I love you, then you think, well, you know, maybe he doesn't love me. Why is he saying that? Maybe he thinks I doubt it or something. There's no need to say I love you. It's like, of course I love you. It's not, you don't even think about, does he love me or doesn't he love you? Whether he does or whether he doesn't. Anyway, we're married and life has to go on. So it's a much more subtle culture in which feelings are for each other. It's not required that they be externally expressed. It's understood. The relationships are not based on a big melodramatic outward show, but rather the feeling is there, or the exchange of rasa that is there, that goes, rasa goes on a more subtle platform, and the expression of love is how in one's everyday dealings and behavior and service like this. And it's because in Western culture it's like giving a gift, because people are so much attached to material things that they think if love is expressed by giving people things. You love your children by giving them many toys. But they give many toys to their children, but they don't spend any time with them. The average American child gets 40 minutes a week from their parent, usually one parent, because their parents are divorced. So they get 40 minutes a week. They may get $40 worth of toys a week, but they don't get actually. The parents think that, well, I don't have time for my children, so give them a toy. That will show that I love them and that will make them happy. But there's nothing. There's nothing there. It's just something external. So this exchange of loving feelings in Indian culture, it doesn't. It's definitely that giving a gift. That's one priti lakshana, dadati, pratigrihnati, giving and receiving gifts. That's a symptom of love. But it's not that what the gift you give. But what did you give me? You know, what am I going to get? What am I going to get? You know, what kind of gift? You have to spend a lot of money, and then we'll understand that you actually love me. But no, the gift, just like Krishna says, patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayatati tadaham bhakti pari ashtami prayatamana. Leaf, flower, fruit or water, what is that? If you're a millionaire, multi-millionaire, now I'm going to give you a gift for your birth. Here it is, a flower. You could have bought me, you know, a house or something. You could have bought me a new Rolls Royce car to go with my collection, but you gave me a flower. What is that? So a flower. What kind of a gift is that? Anyone, anywhere, except if you're in living in some desert in China or something. Even in the desert in Arabia, you can get flowers nowadays because they import them, they fly them in. You'll find the ladies, Indian, South Indian ladies in Dubai are wearing fresh flowers, mogra. It's not grown in Dubai, they fly it in daily from India. So anyway, flowers are generally available anywhere. It's not a very great thing to offer someone a flower, or a leaf, or a fruit. It's what is it? You know, then you get a fruit, you know. What can you mean? If someone is possessive, if someone is desiring material possessions. And then, what is this? You gave me an orange? What kind of a gift is that? But the whole idea is that it's not the gift that's given, but the love with which it's given. So Krishna, who's got everything, what can you give Krishna? You're offering a leaf, a flower, fruit, or whatever. He will accept it if it's offered with love. Of course, if one does have the means to serve Krishna with more than leaf, flower, fruit, and water, if one is a kropati or multi-kropati, then it is more suitable that one offer Krishna not only fruit, flower, leaf, and water and build himself huge apartments in 20 different cities. And he should also, better he should utilize his wealth for building nice temples for the Lord. That will be a better use. Otherwise, where is the life? You only offer a flower and you have the ability to serve in more capacity, then it brings into question where is the love. But actually love, that is not even one may have lots of money and build in temples, that in itself may not necessarily be indicative of love. Because often people, they build a temple for their own prestige and name and fame. That's why, just to give an example, in various cities in India, there are what are known as Birla Mandirs. Actually, they're Lakshmi Narayan Mandirs, but they're known as Birla Mandirs. So who's getting the worship? Whose glories are being propounded more by building these temples? If they're known as Birla Mandir, it's the Birla family. So, it's not necessarily that one is performing bhakti for the pleasure of the Lord, but if he does actually do so, then the Lord will be very satisfied. Even with leaf, flower, fruit, or water. If one actually has love for Krishna. So this series of verses that we're reading now, they are describing love of Krishna, which is the mature fruit of practice of the Krishna consciousness sadhana program. From sadhana comes siddhi, and the siddhi is love of Krishna. And the symptoms, some of the symptoms are being mentioned here. That one will cry tears of regret that I did not attain Krishna. Just like this Madhavan Mukur, he was crying, I did not attain Krishna. All my life I was searching for Krishna, but I never attained Krishna. This is the ecstasy that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach, how to search for Krishna. Always looking for Krishna. He Radhe Vajadeviki Chalalita, He Nandasuna Kutaha, Sri Govardhana Kaupapada Patale, Kalindi Vanya Kutaha, Goshantaviti Sargato Rajapuri, Kedai Mahavibal, Vande Rupa Sanatana Guruva, Sri Jiva Gopa, Ki. This word kedis, feeling of regret or sadness, distress. I could not attain Krishna. Where are you, Krishna? The six Goswamis of Vrindavan are manifesting this morning. Hey Radhe, hey Krishna, oh, all the gopis of Vrindavan, Lalita, where are you? Are you under the are you on a tree at the foot of the Govardhan Hill or in the forest on the bank of the Yamuna, crying out loudly in Vrindavan? They would manifest their feelings of distress, which are actually the highest transcendental bliss. So searching for Krishna. Not that everything finished. Oh. Of course, sometimes the devotee feels like that because this vipralamba bhava, or the feeling of separation from Krishna, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested, that has to be nourished at least sometimes with sambhog or meeting of Krishna. That sometimes there are different phases of Krishna's pastime. Meeting with Krishna and separation from Krishna. So sometimes also devotees feel that, yes, now I'm so fortunate. I have the opportunity to engage in the service of Krishna. But mostly the devotees, especially in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're cultivating this feeling of separation from Krishna. And we should also, as Prabhupada writes, we should also try to cultivate the feeling of separation from Krishna. Not in an artificial manner that we consider ourselves, I'm just like a gopi or something like this, but in the manner that is being described here in this purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that we should feel regret that I couldn't attain Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that I couldn't attain Krishna. But then, why are you crying for Krishna? Oh, that's just a show. Because if I actually attained Krishna, how could I? If I actually attained Krishna, then how could I go on living in this body? So this is the proof I couldn't attain Krishna. So devotees should cultivate this feeling, this regretful thing. Why I can't attain Krishna? Why am I still attracted to the objects of the senses? Why am I still attracted to my bodily relationships? Why am I still attracted to this material world? I cannot attain Krishna. So devotees should feel this regret. Actually, we are separated from Krishna. We are separated from Krishna by our illicit desires, because we desire to enjoy this vina prakriti, this energy of Krishna, which is separate from Krishna. So therefore, we're separated from Krishna by our own wrong desire. Krishna bhuli, seji van adi bahirmo. We are separated from Krishna, not as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is feeling separation from Krishna in prema kata. We have neither prema nor kata. We have neither love for Krishna, neither are we calling out in distress for Krishna. We're feeling quite satisfied in our materialistic situation. This is lamentable. We should lament for our lack of love for Krishna. This is being suggested here, or described here, by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And rudanti, hasamti, also laughing, sometimes in ecstasy of love of Krishna, the devotee is laughing, seeing the wonderful pastimes of Krishna, seeing or hearing about the wonderful pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Devotee, sometimes in transcendental delight, is laughing. There are so many symptoms being given. These should not be imitated, but definitely, if one is even beginning to awaken one's love for Krishna, which from the beginning of Krishna consciousness, the whole process is meant for awakening love of Krishna. And from the very beginning, one can hear about Krishna and begin to appreciate his wonderful pastimes and take pleasure in that. Because if we don't take pleasure in hearing about Krishna, then we'll take pleasure in hearing Ramya Katha. Who is the next president of America? Of course, as preachers, we're living in this world, we may be in contact with its goings on to some extent. But that is not our interest. That is not our subject matter. That what will be the next political configuration? That is not our subject matter. As in passing, or as some kind of, not exactly necessity, but can be. For those who are living in this world and preaching Krishna, or attempting to preach Krishna consciousness, then to know, they should know some of these things. Who is the Prime Minister of the country and different things like that. Otherwise, we're not foolish. I had that personal experience once. When I was in England, and then I was speaking with some guests at the temple, and they mentioned the name someone to me, Callahan. And I said, who are you talking about? Callahan, who's it? He said, oh, you don't know, it's the Prime Minister. He had been 2 years the Prime Minister, and since I joined the temple, I never bothered to keep in contact with any news. I had no idea who the Prime Minister of the country was. So in the estimation of that person who was speaking to me, I was a very strange person. What's called otherworldly. There's a word in English, otherworldly. It means a synonym, or is to have your head in the clouds. It means that you're so much absorbed in some other world, like some spirit. It means like a spiritual person who's so spiritual that they're totally impractical. It's a somewhat derogatory term for someone who's impractically detached from this world. So someone else might have thought, well, that's very good, you see, as long as this person's really, you know, got nothing to do with this material world. But then, actually, we are living in this world and preaching in it, so some contact should be there, because most people, if you're in a country and you don't know who you're, if you're a citizen of the country and you don't know who your prime minister is, people think this is very strange. Or even if you're staying in a country and you're not a citizen of that country, and you don't know who the Prime Minister is, just like devotees coming from other countries, like myself living in India. If we don't know who the Prime Minister is, then people think that we're not giving enough respect to the country, or we're certainly not well informed, because the Prime Minister of India is an internationally known figure among people who read the pages of the newspapers, apart from the sports pages. So, some contact we should have with this world, but our pleasure is not in hearing the news of this world, which is always stale. That example I was giving the other night in Hyderabad, that what's the fresh news today? Here, give me the news. What's in the newspaper? What's going on? That same fresh news, hot news. After a few days, that will only be useful for putting pakoras in from the hot lodge. The same hot news is now hot from hot pakoras. Otherwise, no one has any interest in it. Or sometimes in Russia, we used to see the newspapers. They tear it up and they put it into little pieces and they put it in the toilet for people to wipe their backsides with. So, you know, it's like there's a picture of President Bush. So it becomes very useful in this way. But this Bhagavatam, we're hearing the Krishna Leela after many thousands of years, and it's always fresh. It doesn't become fresh news. What's the news? Krishna ran away from the battlefield. Krishna ran away? Why should Krishna run away? Krishna's not afraid of anyone. Why is that? Then there's news analysis, editorial. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will give the editorial. Why Krishna ran away? Well, there are so many things. He doesn't want to, it's below his dick. This Yavan, Kala by name, it's below his dignity to fight with a Yavan. And if he doesn't run away, he's going to have to fight with him. And then he doesn't want to personally kill him, so he arranges to get him killed and to have his devotee Mutchakunda woken up also. And also there's some pressing business, some very important business, that he has to marry Rukmini. So that's also, that follows on from this Leela. And then, but doesn't it make him look, you know, he's afraid of Jarasandha, but he already defeated Jarasandha 17 times, and you know, Jarasandha's such a fool, he's coming back again. Or is it 18 times he defeated? The 18th time he attacked. He's such a fool, he can't understand. He's going to yet again be annihilated. So so he's only got his coping left, and his whole army is destroyed. And he didn't get the message after 17 times. So one way of defeating someone is just to ignore them. Just like Prabhupada is described in Prabhupada Namrita, how in the early days of in the 22nd Avenue, one man would come every night with a, and he would read from a philosophy book something, and Prabhupada every night would just smash his arguments. And then one night Prabhupada just didn't say anything, and he defeated him that way. In other words, didn't you get the message yet? Whatever you have to say, it's all nonsense. So in this way Prabhupada defeated him simply by ignoring him. So in this way Krishna also, it's not that he's afraid, but he also defeated. So in this way the commentary comes, fresh news. Now we're reading from Bhagavatam, same thing again and again and again. But again and again we're reading, because it doesn't become old, it doesn't become stale. It's always fresh, hearing about Krishna. So hearing about Krishna, we may cry, we may laugh, we may sing, we may dance. We aspire for that day. We should cry for that day when Kabe Hobe Baba Shaydin Ama Aparada Bhuchi Shudaname Ruchi Kriva Bali Hobe Hudaya Sancha. We are praying for that day when we are free from all offenses and we can chant the name in purity. Devotee aspires for that perfectional stage. So, Hare Krishna, I'm going to finish here. And kirtan can begin prior to the lectures from the Samhita part and all these different things. So, Hare Krishna. Is there any question? The goal of life of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is love and separation from Krishna.
So, but
you should nurture those feelings.
But then,
I'm just
saying that the goal is to get into Krishna.
The separation we have at the moment is we're separated by our own wrong desires. So we have to get out of that separation and feel this transcendental separation from Krishna. The gift of pure love for Krishna that is given by Krishna, but the means and the end is the same. We shouldn't artificially try to pretend that I'm on the platform of feeling separation from Krishna. But at the same time, actually I explained this in the class. We should hear about Krishna. Naturally that will awake, by hearing about Krishna from pure devotees, that will awaken at least the beginnings of a desire to attain to that platform. And our crying at this stage is the crying that I couldn't attain Krishna, I'm still so fallen and rascal. This Gopinath song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur exactly expresses the emotions of one who is aspiring of feeling that I couldn't attain Krishna, but while having material desires, but at the same time aspiring for pure devotional service. So exactly what our mood should be, that can, actually that's a very intimate song also, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur also in that song he's somewhat chastising Krishna at the same time. That I don't have any strength to purify myself, but why are you not? I'm your servant. Why do you consider me? He doesn't. Don't think of me as someone external from you. I'm part of, I'm your servant. Why are you neglecting me? But in general, the mood he's singing that Ami tu muraka oti. Tumi to pangitava ame te. Murera mongol, tumi ambishitu. Nada. All this one. Gopinath, mama nivedanishu. Vishayi durjana shada kamaraka kichanahima. I have very sinful rasa, I have no good qualities. This mood, I aspire to attain you, but I am very fallen. So this mood, exactly a conditioned soul, in the mood that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has expressed in that song, Gopinath, this mood we should cultivate. Not try to artificially pretend that I am on the liberated platform.